You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK. Whoa, oh, oh, oh. The Punt Podcast, in association with the FWA.
Genuinely wants to spend the rest of his career at Tottenham Hotspur. I think he's mad.
I'm sorry, how can he escape Flash? It's unbelievable.
So this is an obvious snap. It's a team in great form at home against a team who just aren't that good.
I think he'll score some goals in League One. It's 17-10 any time. Deadly from set pieces and in the air.
Great, the boss is up for manager of the month. They've been phenomenal. They're odds against. Love it, love it, love it.
Subscribe to The Punt on iTunes, listen on Audio Boom, or look out for the link on Twitter or on William Hill's Facebook page.
Hello, everybody. Welcome along to the Punt Podcast here at William Hill. The international break continues. More Euro 2020 qualifiers with the home nations in action. My name is Mark Walton. I'm joined on the line to look ahead to the upcoming games starting on Sunday afternoon by John Cross, the chief football writer from the Daily Mirror. How are you, John?
Yeah, good, thank you. Good. Nice to be with you.
Yeah, thank you for joining us. You're actually out in Montenegro, aren't you, with the England camp? How's that?
Yes, I am, yeah. Yeah, well, it's beautiful weather, beautiful sunshiny day, a little bit hotter than I think it is back sort of back in England. Should be good from what I remember. It's arrived late last night, but nice city, quite 600 England fans coming across. I'm sure they'll have a good couple of days.
Nice. Obviously, we'll talk to you more about that when we get on to the England game, which is on Monday evening, of course. But just general thoughts about the England performance the other night and the mood in the camp. Have you been around the camp quite a lot? And how is the mood at the moment? It must be quite high, I'm imagining.
Yeah, it's really good, actually. A 5-0 home win, which, you know, sometimes you never know quite what you're going to get at the start of a campaign. And in confidence and belief is very, very good at the moment. They're playing with, you know, a lot of confidence, a lot of belief, bringing through young players, which I always think is exciting for the fans and maybe gives the team a lift as well. And I do think, you know, kind of the team is evolving again, really, into something quite special, I think.
We'll have more on that as we build up to the England game a little bit later on in this podcast. We're going to start with Wales against Slovakia. It's the first game, 2 o'clock on Sunday afternoon as Wales welcome Slovakia. 11-10 for Wales, 21-10 for the draw. Slovakia 29-10. Wales had such a wonderful Euro 2016 campaign. They're bidding to kick off their qualifying campaign with a win at home to Slovakia here. They arrive in winning form as well. A late Ben Woodburn goal secured a win for them against Trinidad and Tobago in a friendly. Not the most inspiring result in the world, I suppose, but they did win, and we will see changes here given that this is the first of their qualifiers. Do you like the look of Wales here, John?
Yeah, I do. It's a game they should win, isn't it? It's a game they sort of really should lay down as a sort of a marker. You've got to win your home games, really. So I do think that they've got to do that. The other night, I watched some of it, and yeah, they are going to make changes. That's the most important thing, because it just felt as if they were a little bit sort of sluggish, looking for a little bit of momentum and impetus. They've got some good, you know, good ones sort of kind of coming through, sort of Woodburn included, coupled with the sort of the old guard. You know, Ramsey and Bale. So it's just about finding, a new sort of identity, a new sort of way forward for this Wales team into this qualifying group, I think.
I imagine we'll see Gareth Bale coming back into the team here because he didn't play the other day. He actually scored his first ever Wales goal against Slovakia, so there could be a little bit of an emotional pull on his heartstrings there. You know, he's the obvious way in, really, if you're looking for a bit of extra value about Wales, isn't it? Gareth Bale to score and Wales to win, we've enhanced that as well. That's 5-2. That might be a decent way in.
Yeah, I do think that might be sort of the way forward, really. It's interesting, isn't it, sort of kind of seeing Ryan Giggs talking about sort of just how Wales could almost be a sort of a sort of relief for what he's going through at the moment with Real Madrid. You certainly can't argue with that. Bale is such a figurehead for Wales. You can't understate the importance. I know people always sort of say, oh, kind of, you know, Ramsey's important, of course he is, but Bale and a fit and firing Bale for Wales is just the be-all and end-all still for this Wales team. And I do think that Bale isn't at his best at the moment right now, sort of for Real Madrid. We have to be honest with that. I firmly believe he's one of the greatest exports ever, and I think I can't quite understand some of the criticism, because when you win as much as he does at Real Madrid, then it's just absolutely remarkable. But it always seemed to me Bale being at his best for Wales when he sort of kind of comes over and just feels, you know, I just want to express myself and enjoy myself. And I think maybe it just might be that release, if you like, from the pressures and the scrutiny that he's sort of kind of currently going under for his club team.
And he is the one truly world-class player on show in this game. We do have some your odds for that as well. Somebody has sent in a hashtag your odds to at William Hill on Twitter. You can do that as well if you fancy. And they've gone for Gareth Bale to score a header and Gareth Bale to score from outside of the penalty area. It's 95-1, and he's perfectly capable of doing that. We've seen that in the past as well, if you fancy something at a big, juicy price. But overall, opinion on this game. I mean, we haven't spoken much about Slovakia. They're not a bad side, you know. They opened their European qualifying campaign with a 2-0 win over Hungary. They are capable of causing Wales problems, but do you still think Wales win?
I do. I think that Slovakia seem to have been around a lot, actually, sort of the British teams, whether it's in the finals or actually sort of playing in qualifying. I think they're sort of steady eddies, aren't they, really? But I do think they are there for Wales to be beaten. I would go for sort of the Wales. Almost a comfortable win, really. Wales 3-1.
Wales 3-1, that's 18-1 if you fancy a correct score bet. Wales 11-10 to win the match. And we'll move on. That's Wales covered against Slovakia. We've got San Marino, the opponents for Scotland at 5 p.m. on Sunday. Scotland, of course, need to bounce back from that humiliating 3-0 defeat away in Kazakhstan. I suppose the saving grace for them could be that they travel to a side that haven't won any kind of game since 2014. They haven't actually won against a national side since 2004 when they beat Liechtenstein 1-0. Scotland have won the last six meetings with San Marino as well. 2-0 in each of the last three meetings between the two sides, if anybody fancies a correct score here. But they need to bounce back, don't they, Scotland? And this must be a good opportunity, John.
Well, it must be a good opportunity. I mean, I do think that, you know, the other night it was just an absolute disaster, Kazakhstan. Listen, we must be clear on this. I do think that Kazakhstan, because of the sort of the name that it conjures up, you think, oh, blimey, you know, this is one of Scotland's biggest ever upsets. Kazakhstan aren't quite as bad as that. But if they lose to San Marino, this really, really would be embarrassing. I mean, it's absolutely a disaster. I mean, we shouldn't forget that, you know, Scotland the other night were missing their captain, Andy Robertson, you know, missing some players yet to come back in. And I just think that basically McLeish, though, it started with such a negative. That, you know, even some of the headlines on when was it Friday morning were sort of saying San Marino can smell blood. I mean, it was a disastrous way to start the campaign. And I do feel that sometimes you think that whether a manager can turn that kind of negativity around. And I think once you lose that sort of feeling as a manager, is there any way back here from Alex McLeish? And you do have to wonder. I mean, it was interesting sort of listening to the post-match interviews, and without doubt McLeish was already facing questions about his own future, which after one game is a pretty depressing prospect. We can't forget, obviously, they've still got the playoff as a sort of a backup to their sort of qualifying campaign to reach Euro 2020, because obviously I imagine the sort of the organising UEFA want Scotland to make it, but that's by no means a given. They really are in a sort of a sorry state of affairs right now, Scotland. And this is a game they simply have to not just win, but send out a message of defiance with a more solid, much more impressive performance than they were able to provide the other night.
The market obviously very lopsided in favour of Scotland. 66-1 on they are to beat San Marino, who are 45-1. The draw is 18-1. The traders are presuming that Scotland are going to score a hatful here. Scotland to win by six or more goals is 9-2 on the website. That's been enhanced from 19-5. Personally, I wouldn't go anywhere near that because I don't see Scotland scoring seven. The thing is with Scotland, I suppose, is it a bit of a... I know it was a disappointing result the other day. Is it a little bit of an overreaction given that they weren't too bad before that? You know, they won games in the Nations League. There were signs of some kind of progress. Is it just all a little bit sweep it under the carpet and forget about it for Scotland, or is there more to it than that, do you think?
Look, they, as I mentioned, they were missing players the other night, and that was important. You rightly, you know, say their sort of their previous campaign, sort of the Nations League, they managed to get some momentum, and indeed they even got some decent results in the previous, you know, World Cup qualifying campaign. So I just feel that the team is not in great shape at the moment. I do wonder sometimes when you have that kind of negativity surrounding the manager, whether you know, when the manager is already facing those sort of questions, can he turn it around, really? Can he win back the fans? I think once you lose the fans, I think you're sort of kind of dead in the water, really. It's not... This game, let's be honest, I think we'll all watch and think, you know, surely it can't happen to Scotland this time. I don't think Scotland are in a great place right now. I mean, obviously, you know, they've got some decent players in the team, decent defenders. Obviously, we look at Robertson and Tierney and so on. But that they are, you know, they're relying on sort of Fletcher and, you know, for goals. And it's very, very difficult, I think, I'm not completely convinced that Scotland, despite having almost the lucky backup with the playoff and indeed this qualifying campaign, when you look at the group overall, I'm not completely convinced that they'll get out of this group, even though obviously they've got two shots at it.
Yeah. Any idea of a correct score or any kind of scoreline that you'd be looking at for this?
I'm going to have to stick my neck on the line and say Scotland to win. But I think Scotland will win. I'll go for Scotland to win 3-0.
3-0 for Scotland then. Given what I said earlier on about them winning the last few meetings with these with San Marino 2-0, just as a prize play, Scotland to win an under 2.5 goals in the game. So Scotland win, but maybe not doing it convincingly, 1-0 or 2-0. That's 4-1, considering that Scotland are 66-1 on to win the match. I thought that might be an interesting way. And if you're looking for a goal scorer as well, James Forrest has scored he scored Scotland's last 5 goals, in fact, all 5 of them. So maybe he's worth a look for a potential goal scorer bet. That is 5 o'clock on Sunday. 7:45 on Sunday, we've got Northern Ireland against Belarus. Northern Ireland are 3-4, the draw 9-4. And Belarus are 9-2. Northern Ireland managed to break a frustrating run of results with victory over Estonia on Thursday night. Their first win in 9 competitive matches, in fact. So their home form is generally pretty strong, although not a place for draws, Windsor Park. There've been no draws in the last 17 Northern Ireland home matches there. What do you make of them against Belarus here, John? Do you think Northern Ireland can continue to build on that recent performance?
Yeah, I do think it's something that that they've got to look to. I mean, sort of Michael O'Neill, we're talking about sort of after that sort of stuff performance really against Estonia, just to be a little bit more polished. And I do think that he also needs to, I don't know, get back that momentum that sort of Northern Ireland have got, particularly in their home games, if they're going to sort of get out of this qualifying group, really. It's certainly a game that you would hope that Northern Ireland could win. And indeed, if they do that, then suddenly you feel as if they've given themselves that kind of really sort of foot in the group, foot in the door. And basically, because if you just get back-to-back wins, then it gives you a really steady sort of, you know, marker to come from. It's going to be difficult, I think, overall qualifying for Northern Ireland, but you certainly couldn't back against them. It's a decent start, you know, certainly the fixtures, the way that they've fallen. And I just think the sort of, you know, O'Neill the other night was talking about a lack of, you know, sort of needing to address a little bit of a lack of quality with the final ball. I do think that's something that's always going to have a bit of an issue for Northern Ireland. But also, I think in games, the passion in the crowd maybe perhaps is something that will give the team the impetus and the belief that they can overcome sort of opponents and, you know, maybe repeat their heroics of 2016 and get and come through and sort of reach the finals of the tournament.
3-4 for Northern Ireland to win on Sunday evening. Let's just have a little line on Belarus as well. They fell victim to Holland last time, the rejuvenated Dutch side, who are on a real run of form, aren't they, as they try and make their way back to the top table of international football. But prior to that, Belarus were unbeaten in 6 games in all competitions. They didn't concede a single goal during that unbeaten spell as well. They're a tough side to break down, aren't they? Unless you're Holland, of course.
No, absolutely. And listen, Holland are the standout group, aren't they? You say that team right now based on form. But, I mean, they are a difficult thing. And, you know, been in recent times to Belarus. And they're very much a sort of a together and sort of tight and compact unit. They certainly don't have the sort of, you know, sort of individual skill, in my opinion, sort of recent times. But a tough nut to crack. But also, I just think that Northern Ireland should be able to do it. If you look at what Northern Ireland possess at home, I do think that I'd fancy Northern Ireland to do it.
3-4 then, fancies Northern Ireland to do it. Any goal scorers or players in particular that have caught your eye? I mean, traditionally, we used to go to Kyle Lafferty's the first angle, really, for a goal scorer for Northern Ireland, but his goals have dried up for the national side. Are there any alternatives you'd look at here?
Yeah, they are looking for a new hero, aren't they, really? You know, Nomagin the other night sort of basically getting his sort of score sheet sort of underway, really. I do have to say it's a team that sort of... he's really going to absolutely have to sort of bring this team together again. I do think Michael O'Neill was going to be a difficult one for him because, you know, they don't sort of lack the quality. You know, McNair is obviously sort of a standout player. Evans as well, Saville, but really, I think they'll have to find a sort of kind of a bit of a new hero. I mean, let's not forget really sort of Lafferty. You know, during his sort of goal drought, it was barely playing sort of first team football, and so it was a very difficult one. And I think the issue will always be for Northern Ireland to try and get sort of players playing at a decent level, whether that's sort of the Championship or indeed the Premier League, really to get them kind of you know, match fit and firing for their qualifying campaign. So again, I think it's going to be a really difficult challenge for Michael O'Neill, and you do begin to wonder whether sort of 2016 might have been the peak of this team, and they're sort of now having to move on to a new generation, and that itself really brings a new challenge, really. But I do think their home form will be key to this qualifying campaign, because what they lack in quality sometimes they make up for in determination and desire.
Yeah, and we see the atmosphere and the form that they had at Windsor Park in past seasons, and you can see that their home form is going to be key to their chances of qualification, isn't it? Northern Ireland to win at home to Belarus could well be the angle there on Sunday evening. Let's move on to Monday night, the 7:45 p.m. kickoff in Montenegro as they welcome England. Montenegro are 8-1, the draw 17-5. England are 38-100. England notched 5 in an impressive performance against the Czech Republic on Friday night. 5-0 winners, with Sterling getting a hat-trick and Harry Kane on the score sheet as well. It's 5 wins and a draw in 6 games since their brilliant World Cup journey, and you've spent some time with the England camp over in the World Cup and since as well. There's just a great sense of things coming together for England, and the youth talent coming through, and Southgate is getting the players playing nice football in a good system. The mood must be superb with the England camp.
It's full of belief. I do think there's no better way to start off than to sort of 5-1 at home in your opening sort of qualifying game. So, you know, the belief will definitely be high. What really interests me is that basically, I think Southgate inherited a team which got him through, what was it, back in sort of September 2016, took charge permanently by sort of the following spring, March 2017. And the way that teams have evolved. So he basically inherited the likes of sort of Rooney, Joe Hart, Theo Walcott. I mean, it's hard to remember those sort of guys, but it wasn't that long ago. And he basically evolved it into a kind of a different team for that World Cup campaign using a back three. And now all of a sudden you're seeing a different team again, you know, back four, and then basically also the emergence of young players like Jadon Sancho, Callum Hudson-Odoi came on, you know, for a brief cameo role as a substitute. Then you've got Declan Rice, you know, who might potentially make his first start in Montenegro, and suddenly you have a new look team again. It really is exciting times, because underneath that crop, then you sort of look into towards the likes of, I don't know, sort of a Phil Foden sort of era, and you know, the options really and the dynamics for England are really, really exciting. So I do think that also, don't forget that basically that this is England's, well, as they see it, their home tournament, if you like, because they're sort of staging some of the games at Wembley, and indeed semi-finals and final are at Wembley. So this is the team, and this is the time really for the FA that they think this England team should be and could be coming of age.
I might be getting ahead of myself a little bit, and I know they got ahead of themselves in commentary a little bit on the TV as well the other night, but imagine England walking out in a semi-final of European Championships or the final. You cast your mind back to Euro 96 and the atmosphere and the feel-good factor around the country and what we saw at the World Cup this year, even though it wasn't in England, it would be something else, that, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would be, and I do think it's something that would really, you know, sort of lift the nation. I do think they've got a genuine chance of being in that mix of being amongst the top four best teams that sort of European football's got to offer. I mean, listen, the way that sort of the Dutch have come back is truly impressive. I mean, I do think that sort of Germany are sort of in a transitional time. You know, you don't quite know really what you're going to get from Italy. Can they improve that much? I think France, without doubt, are the sort of the standout team right now in world football. It's a question of really being a little bit lucky with the draw, I think, because, you know, there's no doubt about it. You couldn't say that England are absolutely, you know, stitched on to win the tournament or anything like that. But they would definitely be in amongst the favourites, I would say. Sort of the maybe top three, top four favourites to win Euro 2020. Just because of this new generation and that home advantage, which you just cannot underplay. As long as they can handle the pressure and the expectation, which I think under Gareth, particularly in Russia last summer, proved that they can.
You've already mentioned the young talent that Gareth Southgate's managing to bring into the side as well, Jadon Sancho and Callum Hudson-Odoi as well at the weekend. One of the big things for Gareth Southgate as well is the way he's transformed the confidence and the way that Raheem Sterling is playing at the moment. I know Sterling needs a lot of credit for that himself as well, but that hat-trick the other day, you know, he's a transformed player. He's scored five goals in his last three England matches. That's some turnaround considering he'd scored just twice in 45 appearances before that. He looks like he's enjoying his football. He looks kind of like the Raheem Sterling that you see playing for Manchester City, which is huge for the national side.
Yeah, it is really. What I liked about him the other night was that you could see that the other players buzzed around him, and sort of so Sancho was kind of feeding off his energy, and sort of Kane was dropping deep, and Sterling was always looking confident, full of belief, and sort of, you know, making angles, opening things up, and I just thought that was a really, really sort of exciting glimpse of what Sterling is sort of capable of, and certainly does on a regular basis for Manchester City. I mean, you know, he hadn't scored for 3 years before he scored twice against Spain, you know, sort of in the autumn. And now he just can't seem to sort of stop scoring, and he's really in good form for club and country. And without doubt, I do think that he's one of the most exciting players in the world right now. And I do think he's sort of, you know, bordering on sort of getting into world class. And he's certainly sort of the figurehead and driving force for Manchester City. And I just think while you can sort of kind of feed off that positive energy for your national team, then I think Gareth Southgate will be absolutely delighted. I mean, really is coming, you know, of age. And I do think that basically the thing I like about, you know, as you referred to before, it must give a lot of those sort of younger players completely similar, but sort of, you know, along the same lines, like your Sancho's, the Hudson-Odoi's, those sort of players coming through must look at Sterling and think, well, if he can do it, we can play with that sort of belief and, you know, come through and confident. And talking to Sancho and Hudson-Odoi, those guys are so confident, you know, that they're really different from the nervous sort of players that we've seen in the past. And they want to play for England, they want to make their mark, and that goes for so many of the other players for England. You know, in the past, the players have been intimidated and nervous, I think, of the expectation. But now they really, you know, it's a different mental approach to playing for England. They're really, really enjoying it.
Yeah, you can see that in the way they play as well. You've got five or six England players now that actually want to turn and run at an opposition rather than trying to play sideways and not give the ball away. They want to use it instead, which is nice to see. Raheem Sterling, by the way, 6-5 to score any time. He's 7-2 to score first or last. 6-1 to score two or more. And if you think he can get another hat trick, which might be dreaming a little bit, that's 33-1. I've got a left sided stat for you, or a left field stat for Jadon Sancho as well. How about this for a stat, John? We try and make stats out of everything. If he scores, he will be England's youngest ever player to score on his birthday, 19 years of age. How about that for a stat?
Love it, love it. I could actually see it happening. Look, I do think that Sancho will probably start again. And I think the team will be very, very similar to the other night. Obviously, Eric Dier's out injured. I'm not sure that Dele Alli will start his second game in quick succession. But otherwise, I think it will be generally the same. And I think that basically, it wasn't so long back, was it, that we were looking at the statistics and thinking, where are the England goals going to come from? Because, you know, this player like sort of Dele Alli hadn't scored for so long, Raheem Sterling hadn't scored for so long. And now I just think that the team is buzzing and sort of could get goals from all over the pitch and not just rely too heavily on Harry Kane. So it's a bet actually that I wouldn't think it would be too outrageous, and it might just be the perfect way for Jadon Sancho to celebrate.
Jadon Sancho to score any time, by the way, is 9-5, which is a perfectly good price. He's 5-1 to score first, 5-1 to score last as well. Some of the positive stats for England, I mean, we've got a lot of them at the moment. England's away form as a whole is quite excellent, 21 unbeaten away from home, running back to 2009. Their European qualifying record is superb as well, unbeaten in their last 19. They've won the last 11 of those in a row. If I'm just playing devil's advocate slightly and just playing for the negative side of things, they don't have a particularly brilliant record against Montenegro. They've won only one and drawn three of their last four matches against them. The most recent of those was an England win, 4-1 back in 2013. They've drawn the last two away games in Montenegro as well, a 2-2 draw in October 2011 and a 1-1 draw in March 2013. They have struggled away at teams like this in the past. Is this a different England side though?
It is definitely a different England side, and I think I'm right in thinking that the sort of the 2-2 draw in 2011 was the game, wasn't it, that Wayne Rooney got sent off and for an overreaction, and basically we had sort of that nervous wait about how many games he would miss sort of the tournament. And I do think it's very much the atmosphere, and I think Gareth Southgate would be hamming that message home, that it is a tight-knit ground, not a huge amount of England fans there, just because it is such a small ground, about 600 I think coming, which was fantastic effort by the way, but I do think that they'll try and make it intimidating and tight and close and competitive and fast. And so I do think it will be a test for England. I think it might actually be a sort of a tighter scoreline. I actually think that England might just sneak this one 2-1. But so I don't think they'll necessarily have it all their own way, but I would expect England to win it. And if they can do that, you're open up with your sort of qualifying campaign with two wins. And like other other parts of the home nations, you think, well, blimey, sort of almost halfway there to qualifying. I think with England, their campaign and their qualifying group, if they could win this one, it gives them a fantastic foundation to wrap up the group quite nice and early, I think.
And you've got some decent value about England there if you side with those kind of ideas. 2-1 to England is 8-1. England to win the match and both teams to score is 14-5. Obviously, England are odds on just to win the match, so that gives you a little bit more value in there. And if you do think Montenegro are capable of getting on the score sheet, one player that might be worth a look is Stefan Magosa, who's scored four in his last four games for his national side, and he's 15-4 to score any time against England. So overall opinion, England to win, but maybe not quite as impressive as the other day, not really running away with it.
Yeah, I think that's fair, really. I do think that I just think in these games it's sort of just a test that basically it almost feels like a bit of an FA Cup game in the way that, particularly away from home, as long as you sort of kind of can survive those harum scarum sort of early stages, then I would expect England to kind of come through it and win it. But I just think that the Montenegrins will make it as tight and as tense as they possibly can. There's quite a sort of a national fervour here about the place. When I arrived Saturday night, there's sort of anti-government demonstrations, and the whole city is sort of very passionate right now, and very sort of determined and defiant. And maybe if they could take that sort of spirit into the stadium and get behind the nation, and sort of the team and indeed the nation, then I do think that maybe they can sort of whip it up into a sort of a decent atmosphere that basically can make life difficult for England. But as I say, I do expect England to sort of kind of come through a tense, nervous night with a victory.
And if you are correct, it will be five in a row for the first time under Gareth Southgate. Five wins in a row if they do beat Montenegro on Monday evening. Let's move on to Tuesday night's game. Final match we look at is with the Republic of Ireland against Georgia. The Republic are 8-15. The draw is 29-10, and Georgia are 11-2. Ireland were hardly convincing in beating Gibraltar 1-0 on Saturday, and goals are looking a little bit of a problem for Mick McCarthy's men. He's of course now back in charge of the national side. Georgia lost 2-0 to Switzerland to end their decent run of form, really. They'd lost only once since October 2017 prior to that. So could they cause Ireland one or two problems on Tuesday night?
Yeah, I do think it's... I think the biggest problem, as you say, is goals for Ireland. It certainly was the sort of the thing that really sort of handicapped them in the last couple of campaigns. They've got a sort of a solid base, haven't they, really? I mean, starting with sort of McGoldrick and Maguire the other night, and it's... I do think that the basic... This has got a... It feels a bit of a strange setup at the moment also for Republic of Ireland, because we know sort of Mick Carthy's almost there, it feels like, as sort of a kind of a... almost a sort of a temporary manager, sort of keeping the seat warm, trying to sort of develop, you know, sort of a way forward for the country. And at the moment, I'm not completely convinced that the team is particularly convincing moving forward. They haven't sort of kind of got this really strong, convincing sort of style of play, haven't got the greatest set of players. They've definitely got a sort of a really solid base and solid youth. Just find a bit of a way forward, finding a bit of a rhythm and momentum, because the team, you know, in recent times has been sort of much changed. They haven't really found a sort of a rhythm or a steady way of playing or a settled sort of kind of lineup. So I do think that the best thing that Mick McCarthy can do is maybe sort of lay some foundations, get a familiar looking lineup, getting some sort of rhythm in amongst the group, and then basically trying to find some goals from somewhere, because I do think at the moment that will be Ireland's biggest handicap for me, I think.
Yeah, I mean, he's got Robbie Keane as part of his coaching staff. It'd be half tempted to tell him to put a kit on and get on the field with a lack of goals for them at the moment. Could be unwanted history on that front as well. They haven't scored at home in their last three matches, the Republic of Ireland. They've never gone on a longer scoreless run in their history. So if they don't score against Georgia, it'll be a little bit of unwanted history for them. They do have a good record against Georgia, though. They've won 8 and drawn 1 of their 9 previous meetings with them. They've won the last 5 by an aggregate scoreline of 10-1. Do they still come out on top here? If you had to lean one way or the other, would you still go with the Republic to win?
Well, I think we saw Georgia against, you know, in recent times, sort of against Wales, didn't we? And, you know, sort of springing surprises, really. So I do think they're a difficult team to sort of maybe break down. And the goals issue really worries me for Ireland. I hate to be sort of pessimistic on this one, but I just wonder whether sort of this might end up being perhaps the sort of the unwanted goalless draw, perhaps. Really, I just look at it and I worry about the goals. I mean, sort of, you know, they've got some decent players sort of within the group, Ireland, but that lack of goals is the biggest worry for me, sort of thing. Robbie Keane, I did see him at sort of back in December, and he looked sort of really and spoke with sort of a bright way about him and very enthused about the sort of the players coming through and indeed sort of his role in this. But honestly, the lack of a proven goal scorer and indeed the lack of perhaps a little bit of creativity. It was Jeff Hendrick on the score sheet the other night. I think that will be Ireland's biggest handicap and their biggest worry that they will face. But I do think that this has got a chance of a sort of a difficult game, I think, for Ireland to come through, I think, a difficult test. So it wouldn't surprise me if they draw a blank on this one and it maybe perhaps finishes goalless.
Yeah, I like that angle. Under 2.5 goals in the game, so you don't even need to pick the winner because it could feasibly go either way. 8-13, under 1.5, so that gives you 0-0 on your side and obviously 1-0 to either side. That is 7-4. And if you do lean towards Ireland and you think it'll be a low-scoring affair, how about the Republic of Ireland to win in under 2.5 goals at 19-10, considering they're 8-15 to win the match? I'd rather side with any of those other three angles than just siding with the Republic of Ireland personally as well. If you do fancy the draw as well, as John's mentioned, 29-10 and 0-0 is 7-1, which is a nice price. But either way, we're kind of expecting it to be quite a cagey and low scoring affair, aren't we, John?
Yeah, I think we are, really. I mean, you only have to sort of kind of look at what, you know, sort of the Republic of Ireland are about right now, and it's sort of kind of, you know, I think maybe sort of the strength in midfield, tenacity, and you know, listen, they've got some creativity there. I mean, sort of McLean and, you know, sort of Doherty as well. But it's just, I'm not sure really whether they've got sort of, as I say, it's the biggest, that is the biggest aspect really, a little bit of a lack of quality. They certainly have that togetherness within the group, but that lack of quality, either with a sort of a, you know, a playmaker or indeed a sort of, you know, finisher, really. I think that will be the biggest thing that the sort of Mick McCarthy sort of and his group have to overcome if they want to qualify for this tournament.
Great stuff, John. Out of all of what we've spoken about there, do you have a favourite or a favourite bet or a strongest opinion on the matches coming up?
I just feel that maybe England, sort of the team we probably know best, is that basically, I think, in a way, when to win 2-1, I think we might be an interesting bet. Also, I wouldn't bet against, maybe bearing in mind England was so strong, I think, in sort of in the set piece plays. What about a kind of 2-1 and maybe a Harry Maguire first goal? I do think that might be, you know, England relied so heavily on set pieces. And again, I think if this is a tight, tense game, that if they sort of struggle to get their rhythm going, then how about sort of a set-piece play to get them underway and maybe sort of break the deadlock and then go on to win the game that way?
That could be a nice price. I'm just trying to get the price up for... let's have a look then. So Harry Maguire to score first and England to win 2-1 is a huge price, 200-1.
Wow, that's phenomenal, really, bearing in mind sort of kind of, you know, England's strength from set pieces and basically also sort of relying on centre-halves to, you know, to come up trumps. I mean, he's not absolutely prolific by any means, but I just think that the threat England will pose with some of their bigger players at the at set pieces might make that worth a little bit of a look.
Yeah, certainly worth the wait to get the price up there. 200-1, certainly worth a look. Harry Maguire to score first and England to win 2-1. Been an absolute pleasure, John. Thank you very much for joining us. Enjoy it over in Montenegro and hopefully England will win.
Yeah, fingers crossed. Thanks so much for having me.
So thank you very much to John Cross there, who joined us from the Daily Mirror. Out with England camp at the moment in Montenegro. Thank you very much to all of you that have listened as well. Very best of luck with your bets and enjoy the next round of Euro 2020 qualifiers.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.